Happy Friday, everyone. Thank you, first of all of you who are supporting Into the Word and making this radio program possible. We couldn't do it without that help. And so I extend the invitation to anyone else out there that would like to assist. All you have to do is write down the contact information you'll hear at the end of today's program. Then you can send your one-time or ongoing gift of any amount to that address, and it will be used for the radio broadcast fees. Fridays, I always try to remember to urge you to be in church on the Lord's Day. Everybody needs a home congregation. Everybody needs to be there regularly for worship and fellowship and singing and praise and prayer and service and study and encouragement to love and good deeds, all the things that are part of a church family. If you don't have a church family, what are you waiting for? Get out there, do your research, find the place near you that would be a good Bible-believing, Bible-living congregation, and then get plugged in there and stay there. If you are actively looking right now and you are within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, please come and join us. We'd love to have you. And as a little bit more of an inducement, on the 8th of September, for Sunday school class, starting at 9:30, I'm going to begin a Sunday school class called Basic Bible Training. And we're going to go through and we're going to talk about a lot of the basics of who is God and what's He like and can the Bible be trusted and who's the Holy Spirit and what's sin all about and what's the triunity of God and all those sorts of things. And we're going to spend up until about the time of Thanksgiving talking about that. And if you are always interested in finding those sorts of answers in the Scripture, this would be a great time to come and be part of the Elkhart East Christian Church Sunday School class. So if you need to know more, contact me, thomasjshort@comcast.net. We're going to pick up our story today in Genesis chapter 25. We're going to skip over the verses that talk about the death of Abraham because we're not there yet. Abraham is going to have a good several decades before he passes away. That is, after the marriage of Yitzhak and Rebekah that we just talked about in last session. And so we don't want to put him in the grave too soon. So we're going to start in verse 12, which is another one of our genealogy lists, which I know, genealogical lists, when you don't know the family, can be just boring. Sometimes it's boring if you do know the family. But I want you to be aware of it, and we'll speed through it and highlight some key things as we go through. Verse 12 says, "These are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's servant, bore to Abraham." So last session, we kind of closed with the fact that Abraham was remarried to Keturah. He was having more children through her, but that he made sure that all of his boys, all of his children, understood that Yitzhak, Isaac, was the heir. He was the child of the promise. And therefore, he would inherit the tenth city, and he would eventually inherit the promised land. And for that reason, all the other kids of Abraham needed to leave Canaan. So Ishmael has already left Canaan. He's down to the south. The other sons of Abraham, through Keturah, as they get old enough, say in their 20s, Abraham gives them sufficient possessions perhaps even some servants, and sends them eastward to become their own ethnic groups outside of Canaan. And we know that these folks become the Arab tribes of the Arabian Peninsula. So we're talking about Jordan and Saudi Arabia, and even down as far as Yemen. I think Oman is down there somewhere as well. And so these are the places we usually associate today with Islam. And there's good reason for that, because Islam was birthed out of the family of Ishmael. Muhammad traces his genealogy back to either the first or the second son of Ishmael. And so the Muhammadan religion it's not a legitimate religion. We can kind of talk about that later. But the people of the Arabian Peninsula had at one time been tied in to the one true God, because Ishmael was tied in with the one true God as the son of Abraham. Okay, verse number 13 of Genesis 25. These are the names of the sons of Ishmael, named in the order of their birth: Nebaioth, the firstborn of Ishmael, and Kedar. Now, the majority of Islamic historians and scholars believe that Muhammad came from Kedar. But there is a small group of them that insist, no, he was of the firstborn son. Now, there's many, many generations before Muhammad comes on the scene. He doesn't come on the scene until the 7th century of the Christian era. We are currently looking at the 21st century before the Christian era. All right, so the rest of the sons are Adbeel, Mimsam, Mishma, Duma, Masa, Hadad, Tema, Yetur, Nafish, and Kerema. And you might actually even hear with my poor accent a little bit of that flavor of the Arabic Middle East, that these names go with kind of the founders of the Arabian Peninsula peoples. Verse 16, these are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their villages and by their encampments, 12 princes according to their tribes. So there were 12 names there. So Ishmael has 12 sons in similar fashion to how Israel, or Jacob, will later have 12 sons. And in the tribes, the 12 sons of Israel, they become the 12 tribes of Israel. For Ishmael, the 12 princes become the 12 tribes of the Ishmaelites. And then eventually, they become the founders of the people groups of the Arabian Peninsula. Verse 17 talks about the death of Ishmael. We're not ready for that either. We'll come back to this verse when we are. But eventually, verse 18 says, these Ishmaelites settled from Hawilah to Shur, which is opposite Egypt in the direction of Assyria. He settled over against all his kinsmen. And so this is, again, a reminder that the Ishmaelites are located west of the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, where the where some of the Arab tribes are at. Some of the Ishmaelite tribes end up in the Arabian, or not the Arabian, but the Sinai Peninsula, south of what will eventually be Israel itself, south of Judah, because they're close to Egypt, not far from there. And so basically, from this information, we understand that over time, the Abrahamic genome takes over the Middle East, the lower Middle East, and the lower Middle East will be inhabited either by Israelis who have come through Abraham, Isaac, and then Jacob, who becomes Israel, or all the others are coming through either Ishmael or from Esau, who is the twin brother of Jacob, who becomes Israel. So this is why the whole Middle East pays great honor to Abraham, or Ibrahim, as I think his name is pronounced in Arabic. Now, verse 19, we're ready to get back to the story of Yitzhak and Rebekah. These are the generations of Yitzhak, Abraham's son. Abraham fathered Yitzhak, and Yitzhak was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban the Aramean, to be his wife. So we keep all of our genealogical connectors in there for the sake of the first readers of the book of Genesis. The Israelis, who are coming out of Egypt back to the Promised Land, and they need to know how a lot of these different people groups are related to them. So this is the passage by which we can establish the genealogy, the chronology of Yitzhak. He was 40 years old when he got married. And we know that his father then would have been 140 years old, Abraham, when his son got married. The story that we spent so much time on about the miracle back by the well up at Haran. Verse 21. So Yitzhak prayed to He Who Is for his wife because she was barren. All right, so once they get married, they anticipate that there should be a baby arriving within a year or so after the wedding, but no baby comes. And almost immediately at that point, perhaps because of family history a little bit, you know, remember Abraham and Sarah couldn't have kids for a good long time either. Yitzhak starts praying for babies because there has to be a baby because the promise is that through Abraham and Yitzhak, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed. They're also going to be so numerous that you wouldn't want to be able to count them, kind of like the stars in the sky or the sand on the seashore. They have to have babies. So he keeps praying and praying, and another couple of years go by, keeps praying, more years go by, they keep praying, it's 20 years before she gets pregnant. Now, as I already told you, Abraham is raising a whole new family during this time. He and Keturah are having baby after baby after baby after baby, but none for Yitzhak or Rebekah until Yitzhak was 60, they'd been married for 20 years. Now, He Who Is granted his prayer, Rebekah, his wife, conceived, and the children, so she knows she's got something going on here. Now, we're getting ahead of the story a little bit. It's twins. The children struggled together within her. And she said, if it is thus, why is this happening to me? So some of you ladies out there that when your child gets big enough inside the womb that they start moving around, you end up getting kicked from the inside. And you talk about that, because I know I've been privy to some of those conversations. Oh, he's going to break a rib if he keeps it up. Oh, she is just constantly getting on my nerves, waking me up in the middle of the night, wanting to play, or, you know, things of that nature. Well, in this case, this woman, Rebecca, she realizes there's some sort of wrestling match going on inside of her. And she's like, what is that about? Why? And she went to inquire of he who is. Now, that sounds as if she left her tent encampment to go and talk to a, quote, professional, someone that is already clearly tied in with God. Now, I have two suggestions as to who she went and talked to. One is her father-in-law, Abraham. Abraham is the friend of God. God has spoken to him quite a bit in his long life. And he is readily available, no doubt, to her. The other suggestion, just throwing it out there for you to think about, Melchizedek, the priest of God Most High, who lives only about a day's north travel from Hebron, and only a couple of days travel from Beersheba, and at most maybe 3 days travel from Beer Lahairoi. So she's got a couple of different places where she can go and ask someone who is connected with God, what's going on? And this is what God said back through whoever that person was. Verse 23, he who is said to her, two nations are in your womb. Now, remember in our Bibles, when we see the word nation, it's not talking about a government. It's talking about a people group. It's, in Greek language, the ethnic group. So two ethnic groups are inside your womb right now. Two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The older shall serve the younger. So she gets this full-fledged prophecy that she's carrying twins. She probably already suspected that. And that these twins are going to be different from one another. That one of them is going to be stronger than the other guy. And it is going to be the older one that ends up serving the younger one. Now, when we're talking about twins, that's only a matter of moments. Sometimes seconds, sometimes minutes. And so she takes this to heart. No doubt this is all happening in the last few months of her pregnancy when the babies are really active. And so she comes to delivery day having thought about this for a few months. Verse 24, when her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy cloak. So they called his name Esau, which is it's a form of the verb for making something, for working. And so it's made into the sense of a nice piece of work. It's a term that sometimes gets used for something like a rug or something woven. And so he came out looking like quite a piece of work. That's what she's basically saying about him. That's how he gets his name. It sounds as if he might have that genetic tweak that causes overgrowth of body hair. And so he might have been like a little wolf boy, okay? And so he is really hairy. And that becomes an important part of the story later. So he's the first one out. And he's very red. That hair is red. Verse 26. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel. So the first baby is delivered head first and comes out. And he's very hairy. And they call him, oh, what a piece of work, Esau. But lo and behold, as his legs come out, the other baby's hand is gripped tightly around the leg of Esau. And so they gave him the name Yaakov, which means heel grabber or leg puller. Now, it's not altogether clear to me if the idea of someone grabbing you by the heel or pulling your leg was already a metaphor for deceiving someone, playing a trick on them. Or if what Jacob later does attached itself to his name and became kind of a secondary meaning of a jokester, someone who tries to put one over on you. But the literalness is he came out holding on to Esau's heel. And so he gets the name Yaakov, which means heel grabber. Yitzhak was 60 years old when she bore them. And then more time passes. And remember, Abraham's family is getting older as well. Some of those boys are old enough that Abraham sends them off to the east lands to start their own families. But here is Yitzhak and Rebecca raising their own boys, twins. Now, they are maternal twins. I think that's the proper term. It's two eggs separately fertilized. And therefore, while they share some genetic material, they are not identical twins. So they look different than each other, and they also have different personalities, different aptitudes. And so that becomes clear as they start growing up. When the boys grew up, now don't think of them as full grown yet. Maybe it should be better as the boys grew up. Esau, the red hairy one, was a skillful hunter, a man of the field. So Esau liked to get away from the tent city. He liked to get out into the range, the open land, and hunt animals. He kind of liked to be on his own, sounds like. And that might be related to the fact that he could have this condition that has great overgrowth of hair. And so he might be self-conscious about that. But he does become very skillful in hunting. Meanwhile, Yaakov was a quiet man dwelling in tents. So he kind of liked the idea of the tent city. He liked hanging around at home. He liked being with his mom and being with his dad. They're taking care of business around the home tent. Now, that causes a little bit of a split in the attentions of the parents, though. Verse 28 tells us that Yitzhak loved Esau because he ate of his game. So Yitzhak loved a good wild game roast or stew or steak. And so when his hairy boy, his barely eldest son, comes home, because keep that in mind, he is just seconds ahead, and that makes him the heir. That makes him the heir apparent. So Yitzhak is gravitating toward the slightly older boy, but also the boy that gives him delicious-tasting wild game. Meanwhile, Rebekah loved Jacob. Now, part of that might be related to the prophecy. Do you remember what she was told? Don't forget it. The younger will be stronger. The elder will serve the younger. And so Jacob is the younger of the two. And so it could be that she gravitates toward him because of that. And so he hangs out with her a lot around the home tent, learning the encampment, learning how to run things. He's not a mama's boy. Don't think of it in that sense. He is the man that the mama knows will be in charge of this camp eventually. Now, unfortunately, she'll try to help it out, and that'll be a problem. That is the growing up situation that we will kind of end on today. When we come back next time, we will talk about the death of Abraham, which happens when these two twin boys are 15 years of age. So mark your place. We'll be back into the Word the next time God gives us opportunity.